Colonial Consoles, RMU Century Media's premier video game podcast. My name is Malik Johnson, the program director here at RMU Radio. I'm here with Garrett Roberts, the assistant arts and entertainment manager here at RMU Century Media. We've got a nice show with you today. The Division 2 beta is just wrapped up. A Nintendo Direct happened earlier this week, and we've had some other leaks and other fun things we're going to talk about on the show. But first and foremost, let's get started. Garrett.
Yes.
I played the Division 2, the beta.
From what we've been talking about, what are the good changes to Division 2?
So here's the thing. The good changes to the Division 2 is that it is the Division 1. It is absolutely the Division 1. Everything that you liked about it, it is still there. They didn't change a ton. I think Washington, D.C. is an interesting map. I think it's a lot bigger than what Manhattan was.
So I know that we talked about some of the enemies being bullet sponges. Is that an issue?
So it's hard to say. I think because the beta really only let you play two missions from the beginning of the game, there wasn't anything that was super huge. I think enemies died pretty regularly. Towards the end of the beta, I found a sawed-off shotgun, and the sawed-off shotgun was great. It killed, just like in the original Division 1, you found the sawed-off shotgun, you were good. You were one-hitting enemies as much as possible. It was amazing, and the sawed-off shotgun made its return, and it's still just as good. It was a lifesaver. I think the turret did a really good job of doing its thing. The turret actually killed one of the bosses in the game for me by itself, which is great. I think enemies aren't really bullet spongy, but it might just be because what we played was the beginning of the game, and it's a lot easier to kill things in the beginning of the game.
And graphically, what are some of the big changes?
Graphically, it's still the same engine. It's the Snowdrop engine as Division 1, so it looks pretty much the same. I think Washington, D.C. as a map is a lot more colorful than Black Friday in New York. There's a lot of foliage. There's a lot of cityscape. There's a lot of different things going on in those.
All right. So what are some of the downsides that you could see in the beta, like some things that needed to be changed?
So there wasn't a lot. Like I said, the Division and the article that I wrote on RMU Century Media, the Division 2 is the same as Division 1. So it's not a lot. They took what worked in Division 1 and they built on top of it. So there's not a lot. The one thing that I remember being a huge issue was just the grenades. So they definitely have made grenades a lot bigger of a thing. The status effects that come from them, they suck. So when I have a grenader enemy that's throwing a grenade every 5 seconds, it's hard to catch your bearing. But I think that's also a positive too, because you need to strategize for that. You're going to have to flank. You're going to have to target enemies. That reminds me of the other thing. The turret, you can now pinpoint. You can tell it to target certain enemies. And that is that's amazing. Before, the turret would only target the enemy that was closest to it. So being able to throw a turret and say, look, I need you to focus on the sniper over top, on the far end of the map, it makes the turret so much more strategic. It makes playing solo. I played the beta solo. It makes playing it a little more interesting. It makes it a little easier, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people complained that Destiny 2 was more Destiny, and Division is kind of a... Would you say it's a similar game, kind of in the same vein?
Yeah, it's in the same genre.
So do you think that is an issue with games like this, that they're going to end up being too similar? If there's a Division 3, do you think it's going to be more Division, or do you think it'll add some spice to the formula?
I think the genre of game, the kind of MMO, not actually MMO, is more... It benefits from... I think what really the big benefit of this is a change of scenery. It's the evolution of how the classes work. It's
kind of like Fallout, where you get a new location, but yeah, it's kind of the same game.
It's kind of the same game, and there's changes to it, how the classes work and everything like that. But I know what I'm getting into when I play The Division. I liked The Division 1. I played it through the whole game solo. I'm going to play through it again. I'm going to play through The Division 2. And I think that's what it is. You have to find the game that you like and you stick with it. I wouldn't play Destiny 2. I didn't really like Destiny 1.
Mm-hmm.
So once you find that game in the genre that works for you, I think that's where you'll stick.
Mm-hmm. So it won't fall into that Call of Duty, like, where people started to complain every year it was the same game because it's offering that change in venue?
I think it's not an issue that we'll have to worry about. I don't think any of the games so far has went into a three.
Mm-hmm.
I think once we're looking at threes, fours, that's when we'll have to like take a step back and say, what is these games changing? But even still, Division 1 is a completely different game from what it was when it released. So the $60 game, the $60 base game even, is, you know, there are changes coming to it over and over and over again. So I imagine the Division 2 is going to look a lot different than the Division 1. Or the Division 2 will look a lot different than what it will look like on release a year from now.
All right. And I imagine you can share your thoughts again whenever the full game releases.
Yeah, sure, I'll do that. I have the pre-order, so when mm-hmm. the game comes out, I will be happy to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I'll have somebody to play with, and I can talk more about that.
This will be my final address. If you can hear this, you are our last line of defense. If Washington falls, our nation will follow. Division agents, our future is in your hands.
The Division 2. Play for free March 1st. Available March 15th.
Moving on to the list. What was it? Last Wednesday, Nintendo had their first quarter Nintendo Direct. We had a bunch of really cool announcements. We were talking about it before the show, some of the fun things that came out. So, Garrett, did anything really stick out to you?
Well, I think it was brave to start with Super Mario Maker 2. That's a very, I'd say, divisive game, because people either loved it or hated it.
I think Super Mario 2 was the perfect thing to start it off. I think that sets a statement. We're coming into this with new games, games that people wanted. I didn't hear anything super divisive about Super Mario Maker 1. All I heard was positive things. So when Super Mario Maker 2 was announced, I was like, oh, okay, people, this is something that people wanted. It was something that was expected to come on Switch eventually. It was super successful, so.
Yeah, also, I think it was kind of in that vein of it turned either people towards Nintendo going, this is cool that they did this, or bad, is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening being remade in a toy-like style.
Okay. I also heard nothing but good things. I'm not a huge Legend of Zelda player, but I also heard nothing but good things about the announcement.
I'm a little bit deeper entrenched into the whole Zelda, like, fan base, technically. Some people are kind of complaining that the graphics look kiddish.
That's fair. I can see that.
But then again, it is a Nintendo game, so it's made for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the toy style is an interesting choice to go with.
Okay.
In all honesty, I'm still going to play it no matter what it looks like, because that's an amazing game. If you've never played Link's Awakening, I can definitely suggest it.
Okay.
And having it remade from the classic Game Boy is going to be a big step. And I hope they do it with other, like, Game Boy Zelda games, such as Minish Cap, Four Swords. Well, they already made Four Swords again,
yeah,
but
I had that on 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one thing that really stuck out to me was the reveal of Harry Potter, the video game. Fire Emblem Three Houses.
You know, at first I was a little bit confused, and then I got it.
Yeah, it's basically Harry Potter. You play as the teacher in this school, and there are three houses. I don't know if I heard it right, but you pick a house at some point, and you train like leader of that house.
So people complained about, like, Waifu Emblem, but now you're basically picking which family you want to conquer the entire nation. And I feel like that's a step in the right direction.
That's fair. I don't know if it's conquering the right direction. They didn't really say much about the story. They mentioned, you know, some vague JRPG details. You're the only one who sees this mysterious woman. Great. Cool. Fun.
Yeah.
But it looks great. That's the one thing that stuck out. That game looks really fun. It looks like a really nice step up from what they were doing with the 3DS.
Yeah, I like the graphic style from, like, combat and everything, but one thing that I did notice is that the HUD was a little bit, the perspective on it was strange, like, it was tilted in a direction.
I didn't take that as, like, final game footage. I feel mm-hmm. like that was definitely, like, renders.
Well, I hope it is, because that would be really annoying to get used to.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer having everything laid out perfectly fine. Like,
even still, hopefully there's this minimal HUD. They made it seem like there's going to be a lot of HUD stuff, but hopefully you're like really most of the game takes place on the battlefield. But that was the big thing that I saw was Harry Potter the video game. Another thing, we had a couple of different releases. Assassin's Creed 3 Remastered. Why are we re-releasing Assassin's Creed 3?
Of all the games to re-release, like, you could do Black Flag and it would probably do well.
Yeah.
But you do Assassin's Creed 3.
Again, I've gotten flack for this from you. What heathen wanted Assassin's Creed 3?
I don't know. And honestly, on this one, I will say, who wanted it? Was there a base of people going, we want to play Assassin's Creed 3 on a Nintendo console?
No, nobody was. I know Nintendo usually gets like the scraps of the Assassin's Creed games. But at this point, why even release it? This game is going on, what, 6 years now? It's going to come out and people are going to be like, wow, this doesn't look as good as it looked on the PS3. Who was really going to pick this up? We also had Unravel 2, which is Yarny. It's great, sure. We had Deltarune, the first episode, which we talked about a couple weeks ago.
I'm actually excited for that one. I think it will do really well on the Switch, and they actually announced more about how Deltarune is going to function as a game.
Yeah.
Where this first part will be free, and then you have to pay for the additional parts.
Yeah, that's kind of like
episodic. If they're longer, I won't actually care that much. I think I would pay for basically a Undertale a year, which is a bad model in itself, but if it's an actual game and more longer than the kind of demo we got with the first episode, I'd be perfectly fine with that. And based on the fact that they're going to have to take some time to release it, I think they're going to add in some special features to the Switch.
Okay.
Because they did the same for Undertale for Switch, where they added a completely new boss and gameplay mechanics. So.
All right. And then we also had some other games, Dead by Daylight, Grid Autosport, some other games that nobody really wanted.
Yeah, I mean, Dead by Daylight is dead on PC.
Yeah, it's not the game came out on PS4, I think. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But another highlight of the Direct, Tetris 99.
People were saying everything's going to be a battle royale. I was not expecting
Tetris. I was not expecting a Tetris battle royale, but I'm not going to lie. If I had money in my pocket, I would have subscribed to Nintendo Online just to play this. This has been a hit.
I haven't had a chance to sit down with it yet, but I have had a friend texting me that I definitely need to get it and get on learning the strategies for it, because apparently, while Tetris had strategy, and there's a common strategy for Tetris, you use it every time you beat me in class.
Yeah. Because you're a fake gamer and you haven't played Tetris before.
Regardless, with Tetris 99, they actually innovate the formula in a way that you have to adapt new strategies. There's more to the game than just Tetris. Nobody thought you could improve the timeless game, but they did.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've seen some gameplay of it, not a lot. Is this the game that makes you pay for Nintendo Switch Online?
I mean, you get the classic arcade and Tetris Battle Royale. I think that's almost like...
I still can't bring myself to pay for it.
Well, it's what, $5 a month?
20 bucks for a year, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's 20 bucks a year, so...
It's cheaper than PS4 and Xbox One, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think that the online service is up to snuff for what it is, but also it's much cheaper than PSN or Xbox Live. Yeah. If they work on the actual infrastructure of the online, make it better so that in Smash games aren't like stuttering, that would be perfect.
But that's the thing, like their online service, like I appreciate that they're giving me a nice, you know, card with the gift, but I need the gift to actually be in the gift box, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's great that we get this exclusive to Nintendo Online, but I need their Nintendo Switch service to actually work before I'm willing to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't play anything online on Nintendo. I feel like the beauty of Nintendo is couch co-op. It's the games that you play with other people.
Yeah, and I mean, with stuff like Smash, it's a lot better for the... whenever you don't have people there. Like, for example, I have friends in different colleges across the country.
Mm-hmm.
being able to play with them wirelessly is great, but it still stutters. I think that's something they definitely need to improve on.
All right. And then we have more. We have a couple of other games, but you can check out armycentralmedia.com. Scott McDaniel, reporter there, has the recap for what went down.
And I think, honestly, in the only other game that stood out to me was Platinum Games' Astral Chain.
Yeah.
And it only stood out to me for how anime it is.
Yeah, it's really it. It was just like, it was a Platinum Games game.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be nice when it's $20 and on sale.
Yeah, and I mean, it looks nice. It looks cheesy. I just finished Kingdom Hearts 3. There's not going to be a Kingdom Hearts game for probably about 10 years.
Yeah.
It would be nice to play something that's equally as cheesy with bad dialogue and flashiness.
And then we'll finish out our Nintendo block. I found this out just like 30 minutes before the show started. There was a Pokemon leak for Pokemon Gen 8. So what apparently has gone on is Pokemon Crown and Scepter is the names of the new, is the rumored names for the new Pokemon games, Gen 8, which is supposed to come out this year. It is supposed to be, it's rumored to be based off of England, the UK area. And so basically what happened is, I have the thread up here now, just like in 2015 with Pikachu wearing Hawaiian clothes before Sun and Moon's reveal, some plushies of Pikachu and Eevee were wearing crowns, and other clothes resembling royalty have been popping up, Pikachu also holding a scepter. Another image released by one of the official accounts for the new year, Game Freak's official accounts, featured Pikachu and Eevee in royal clothing, crown, scepters, things like that. There is a crown piece of clothing that is buyable in Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee for the max amount of money. Obviously could be a hit, but apparently the strange souvenir was a mystery gift in Kalos, and that foretold Alola. A clearly England-inspired region has popped up in one of the anime episodes. Might be nothing, might be background art, but...
Well, to kind of go off of that real quick, I mean, they hinted at Gen 2 in the Pokemon series with the first episode.
Yeah.
So there's a... They generally are a little bit ahead
of
the games.
The game, yeah. And then also there was one other thing. A map. There's a map in Let's Go Pokemon, Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu that resembles the map of the UK.
Mm-hmm. In all honesty, this has been something that's been hinted at for a long time. Like, yeah. Every leak has been, look, we're going to get England, but also they're running out of big cultural things to base the games off of.
Yeah.
Before they start revisiting certain cultures and nations and, like, adding in new Pokemon into them, I feel like they're going to kind of drain the well dry, and England would be a next good step.
Yeah, what also the thread that I pulled up also mentions is that in Pokemon lore, it could connect through Kalos with a 3,000-year war, Kalos being based off of France, and the relationship between England and France in real life. That would be an interesting thing, an interesting way to connect the two. So yeah, I think it's definitely it's believable. I think there's not much here that screams fake leak.
Also, with the way that, like, Pokemon games have been going plot-wise, I think that having, like, a game based around the War of the Roses but with Pokemon would be kind of interesting. Like, you see two enemy teams kind of square off against each other like they did in Ruby and Sapphire with Aqua and Magma, but you have these two villains who are not evil, but they have differing values, and neither of them are really great for everybody, and then your protagonist is, you know, I'm here to stop these things.
I'm a 10-year-old boy. I understand the world's problems.
Yeah, I mean, as they try to make the series more accessible, they also make it darker, and I feel like
that's my favorite part of the just really dark. X and Y, where like a Pokemon died, and like that's in lore, like this Pokemon died,
and then he killed roughly a million people to get it back.
He committed Pokemon genocide.
Yeah, and you look at Ultra Sun and Moon. In that, Necrozma steals your life energy to Mega Evolve, which is dark itself, but the entire plot is about, the world's going to end if you don't stop this world-ending Pokemon.
All right. Sure, man. Whatever floats your boat. I just want to catch some monsters.
So what do you think some inspirations for the Pokemon could be? Because we've already had some England-like Pokemon.
Yeah, I think a crown is probably going to be one of them. I know it's probably really cheesy with the game being called Pokemon Crown. I think a scepter is a really good one. We already have the sword Pokemon.
Haunage.
Haunage. Yeah, sure. Whatever it's called. I really don't know. I guess like a knight would be interesting, but I don't know how they would do that because Pokemon tend to be. I guess knight's armor they could do.
Well, I imagine it would be kind of like along the same lines as a knight enemy in any other game where it would be kind of something underneath armor. We've had Shelmet, which is kind of like that.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess there is already a pretty decent like English Pokemon.
It would probably end up being a lot like Unova, where you had
let's not do that.
100 new Pokemon, but mixed Unova in with other ones.
Unova was arguably the worst region.
Yeah, but with Mega Evolution, they can make it a little bit more interesting.
Okay. All right. So the 4chan leak mentions other information among the starters being a rabbit, a sheep, and a dolphin. What do we think about that?
In all honesty, I could see the rabbit and the sheep, but I don't know where that dolphin's coming from. It would probably be another seal.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see the rabbit being the fire Pokemon, the sheep being the grass, and the dolphin being the water, but the dolphin is the one that sticks out there, definitely.
And also, we've already had sheep and rabbit Pokemon with Mareep, Bunnaby, all those, so I don't think the starters would be that. There's always the possibility.
Yeah, they seem like safe bets.
Yeah.
I mean, Turtwig was what, a twig?
Well, we have, what is that now, 4 turtle starters?
Yeah, turtle starters. There's been a couple penguins, I feel like.
We've had a couple of penguins.
Piplup. And
they all follow the same kind of formula.
Yeah.
I just don't know if they would go with something kind of...
I really don't know what... I mean, I guess what? Unova was a vine. The grass Pokemon was just a vine, so...
Yeah, a vine, a pig, and an otter.
Yeah, so I guess there's not too much room for... There's not too much of a standard for what they can do and what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, essentially at the end of the day, it's something that starts off cute and ends up looking cool.
Yeah.
They constantly try to recapture that fame they had with Charizard, but it never happens.
I like Turtwig. Turtwig to Torterra is probably...
Oh, yeah, that's a close second, and...
The middle Pokemon, whose name I forgot, is forgettable, though.
Oh, all the middle Pokemon are, but...
Yeah, there's not... I don't know. Sceptile. Or Grover?
Grovyle.
Grovyle. Arguably better than Sceptile.
In the end of the day, whatever it is, it's going to be cool.
Yeah.
It's going to get people to buy the console. People have been waiting for Pokemon, and I feel like this would be a good way to do it.
And moving on, away from Nintendo, Sony says they will not attend E3 this year because the format is outdated. This is in an interview. I think it was Sean Layden, correct?
Yes.
All right. So tell us more, Garrett.
All right. So essentially the story here is that Sony said that they don't think that E3 is as viable of a way to sell games anymore. Because it's not in the retail season. Selling to retail after E3 is a lot harder than like doing it earlier in the year.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's why there's GameStop Expo.
Mm-hmm. And their way that they're trying to kind of account for that is by having web shows, kind of like the Nintendo Directs, called destination PlayStation.
Okay.
Where it'll be kind of like that Nintendo Direct, you're speaking directly to people, but they just feel that E3 isn't as prominent anymore. You can see things on live streams. People are watching E3 on live streams. So why put in all that effort on stage for people who don't even really like games? They're just there to report on it.
Yeah. What's really interesting is I remember back in my old games covering days, back when I was in the trenches with my reporter's cap and my tablet, Gamescom was the event that people were like, Gamescom, people were like, this is viable. This is the future of press conferences. It's open to the public. And that's why E3 was eventually open to the public. Or it was one of the reasons, at least. So to see Sony completely get out of E3 and go towards this direct-to-consumer route is really interesting, especially because we know with movies, that's not the same. You go to a movie theater, direct-to-DVD movies typically don't do as well. So I think it's really interesting to see the difference between the two.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that they put it is that games media operates on 24/7, so why have one event when you could throughout the year go, hey, look, we got the rights to this. Here's this event.
Yeah. I think it makes more sense. PlayStation's been doing a good job with it. I think one thing that would have made it, would have hammered home that point a lot more would have been keeping their December event, whose name is escaping me right now. Their December event that they hold, that they didn't hold this year. PlayStation Experience. Yeah, holding PlayStation Experience would have made a lot more sense because it's people who care about PlayStation that are there. So it is, in fact, direct to a consumer.
So they also attached a second kind of idea to this.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's a little bit, while they're not going to be going to E3, it also explains why they don't want to. They are going to start focusing on producing fewer games, but bigger experiences. And that's kind of interesting because with like stuff like Spider-Man, God of War, which are longer games, they're more dynamic, more interesting, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen massive success, critical acclaim. So seeing them kind of move in that direction, producing fewer things and showing them fully on stream will probably be a good idea.
Yeah, Sony's been moving in that direction for a while now. You see, the past couple of years, they've been talking about the same four or five pillar games, and pillars are what they usually call it. So to see them openly admit, hey, we're not working on as many things, I think this also is really a good telltale. I think they obviously can't say it, but I think Sony not being at E3, and I think we talked about this, it's good. It's a good indicator that we're getting closer to the PlayStation 5. I think that's really what we're seeing. We're seeing Sony. I think a couple weeks ago there was an article that came out that all of Sony's first party studios from this point forward are working on PlayStation 5 games. And so they obviously don't have enough to fill a conference. They haven't really relied on third party and indie games as much as they did in the beginning of the PlayStation's life cycle. So them not holding E3 conference, I think, is a really good indicator that we're looking at a PlayStation 5 sometime soon.
Mm-hmm. Probably, I would say within the next 2 years.
I think 2020 is going to be the year. I think late 2020 is probably will be when we see PlayStation 5. It's a pretty decent spot to put one out. The only other thing that I wanted to mention that I forgot to mention that came up in the direct, Chocobo Mystery Dungeon.
I don't know what that is. Can you explain it to me?
So the Mystery Dungeon series is, as I'm sure you know,
hashtag
is a broad series, and they like license it out to different people, and they make like different spinoffs, like you would, like a Dynasty Warriors type thing. So Chocobo Mystery Dungeon is the Final Fantasy version of this. It's a Final Fantasy mystery dungeon. But what this means, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon is closer Hashtag Pokemon Mystery Dungeon on Switch. Yeah. I need it.
I'm interested as to what Chocobo Mystery Dungeon actually plays like.
You play as a Chocobo, and you go around, and you go through randomized dungeons, recruit different monsters to fight alongside you. It's the same thing, different paint, different coat of paint.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that coming out around the same time as Final Fantasy VII for Switch?
Probably. I just saw Chocobo Mystery Dungeon, and I was like,
"You were instantly excited for
Pokemon Mystery Dungeon is close. We will get it soon."
Now, when they make Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, will it feature the new generation?
It has to. They have so much Pokemon now, they have to. Usually what they do is they do it in between generations, where Pokemon Let's Go came out is traditionally where we would have gotten a Mystery Dungeon. So we might not see it until 3 years from now, after Gen 8 comes out. After Gen 8 comes out and after that's, nice and saturated and soiled. And then we'll see.
I don't like the verb soiled.
Soiled. After that's nice and saturated, nice and sat in there, we'll see a Mystery Dungeon, hopefully. And that'll have all of the Pokemon since Unova. Unova, I think, is the last generation that had a Mystery Dungeon game to go with it. Other than that, that is Colonial. Garrett, what are you working on this week? I cut myself off.
All right, so this week I am working on... We have an article in the works about the Quantum Theater coming to the Tool Family Theater down in Swickley. Of course, whenever gaming news pops up, we usually publish that. And then we have a Humans of RMU going out next week. I said that on the last podcast, but it was pushed back to this week.
Convenient.
Yeah, it's convenient. Reusable content. And of course, always check out Colonial Rock Radio from 8 to 9 on RMU Radio, the Radio FX app.
Yeah. I'm also pretty much running a radio as of right now. I've been doing that pretty decently, I'd say so. So be sure to tune in to RMUradio.com. You can download Radio FX and listen to us on your phone. You can also chat with us during live shows. We don't do this show live, but during Colonial Rock Radio or... my other radio show, Let's Talk About It, you can talk to me and whoever else is in the studio with me. But we will be back recording Colonial Consoles in 2 weeks, 3 o'clock. Be sure to tune in.
We're still recording. I can say whatever I want because it's technically after the fact. Like I can say.